This is a recording of Dr. Tom Rozell for Sunday, June 3rd, 2018. You can listen to this program live every Sunday afternoon from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on 105.9 FM and AM 630. WMAL.
It's paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed on this program are not the views of 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozell Live by Dr. Tom Rozell, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozell Live, right now. On 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozell Live in studio, waiting to take your calls on anything you'd like to talk about your health. We have a program today that I think is going to be very interesting, one that is going to put a different perspective on chronic pain patterns, something that, you know, unfortunately we're all aware of today with the problems with the narcotics and the drugs that are out in our society and being overprescribed. But, you know, if we can turn a little different light on it, perhaps something that you can do immediately to make a huge difference. And, you know, who better, you know, to discuss this subject with than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning, who many of you know and have heard lecture, a wealth of incredible information and application. Dr. Browning, welcome.
Dr. Rozell, always a pleasure to be with you.
Dr. Harlan, listen, you know, we're going to talk about a subject that is very applicable today, something that is pain is one of those things that people suffer with and destroys lives and allows, you know, the degradation, if you will, the breakdown of the body and the soul, if you will, over a period of time. We put up with, we deal with. But here's, you know, a different look. We're talking about myofascial pain and inflammatory reactions, or myofascial pain and inflammation, which is going to be the subject of your presentation this coming Wednesday evening, June the 6th at 7 p.m. Let's get into it a little bit. What's the difference between myofascial pain and pain? Is there a difference, or are we talking about the same thing?
I think that when you look at myofascial pain, let me explain what that means. Is fascia is this connective tissue that surrounds all of our muscles and our organs, and it's made up of different layers. There's a superficial layer, and, you know, we can see that on the body. We can see where muscles become flatter, and that flatter part is a fascia. So when you see a person's six-pack abs, the delineation between each of those sections of the abs is actually fascia. There's a deeper layer, and that provides the surrounding of big muscle groups, like the muscles in the front part of the leg, the quadriceps. They're all kind of grouped together. And then there's actually a deep section called a visceral fascia that surrounds our organs, our brain. That's the meninges, our heart, the pericardium, our lungs, the pleura. So all of these networks work together to hold us in one place, and most importantly, to provide the ability to transfer energy in our body to make us more efficient when we move and do things from a day-to-day process.
So we have one big plastic wrap around everything.
Correct.
And so we're talking about this plastic wrap, this fascia, this covering, this overlay. You know, so people can understand what it is that we're talking about. Have you ever gone to the supermarket or the meat shop specifically, and you see a piece of meat that's laying there on the counter, and it has this kind of blue silver look on top of it? That's fascia.
That is fascia, and the coating on top of a bone. We've seen if you're eating a rib, and that coating that comes off the bone, that's periosteum. That's part of the fascia. It's that network that connects everything in the body, and it's extremely extensive. And up until this point, it's still relatively unknown.
You know, there was an article that was released within the last few months, which took me by surprise, and very few things do. But traditional science is now looking at this underlying piece underneath the skin itself, the connection between that and the fascial layers as another organ system. And it was quite interesting. I've got to do some more, you know, background and research informationally, but I think this will tie in, and I'll touch upon it a little bit as we go through. But let's talk about the fascia itself, and why does the fascia, and we're going to get into inflammatory pathways as well, why does fascia, how can it cause pain?
Well, you know, fascia is not too much different than our ligaments and our tendons. It's made up of collagen. It's in a matrix. A matrix means that it's a pattern, and the pattern has a tendency to flow in a direction, and that's more or less to allow us to transfer energy from one point to the other. The fascia that we now know is highly vested with nerves and blood vessels, and those nerves certainly transmit pain. Okay. And they also hook up to what we call our autonomic nervous system. That's the fight or flight or the sympathetic nervous system. So, we find that the fascia is certainly alive and well. And in many cases, it's not doing the things that it should do. And it's telling our body and our brain that there's something wrong. The issue is it's a very gray area, and very often we'll have fascial problems, but it's not very easy to locate exactly where it's coming from.
So what you're saying is that this fascial pattern, this fascial tenting, this wrapper that goes around muscles and organs and bones and the like, it's not just a hard mechanical piece, but in fact it has neurochemical responses as well.
Absolutely. It's living. It's very plastic, meaning it changes with time, and that can be for good, very often for bad. In other words, the fascia will harden, develop adhesions, and that changes its ability to transfer energy. It causes that autonomic nervous system to change. So now the blood vessels do not expand and contract appropriately. So then the person might have some numbness or some coolness in the arm or the leg. And very often the end stages, we start to develop this diffuse pain that usually starts to spread, because as we develop more and more pain, then we try not to move to accommodate this, but that lack of movement causes that fascia to tighten even more.
So it's the rigidity of the fascia, or the tenting, if you will, the wrinkling. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, it's fair to say wrinkling. It shortens up. If we took a sample of it and put it under a microscope, instead of the wavy lines being next to each other, now we would see them overlapping, kind of intertwining, and that causes those structures to become more and more rigid. And as they become more rigid, then it starts to fire those nerves and choke those blood vessels, and ultimately cause us to have some sort of pain and very often an impairment.
My guest in studio, your host this Wednesday evening, June the 6th, 7 p.m., Dr. Harlan Browning. We're going to be talking about myofascial pain and inflammation. And let me just add a little bit. The reason that this is such an important topic is that if you ever went to a physician, you ever went to any traditional doctor, and even alternative doctors sometimes, and say, I'm in pain. I have chronic pain all the time. And they come up with this nebulous, doubtful kind of diagnosis, and they say, take these pills for the rest of your life to control the pain, take them as needed, except now you get an addictive process. You're looking at pain patterns from a very different perspective, one that is going to make the rest of it very understandable, but more importantly, that it's resolvable, and that's the most important piece. This Wednesday evening, you're going to be privileged to hear one of the best in our profession talk about pain patterns. You owe it to yourself, if you're suffering from pain or anybody else, and it's something that has not been diagnosed, to be there with us. Dr. Browning will open up that vision for you to show you not only where it's coming from, but more importantly, how it's fixed. Dr. Browning, myofascial pain and inflammatory reaction. So, you know, we know that it bunches, it tents, it has nutritional patterns. What triggers these myofascial irritations, if you will, these myofascial aberrations that cause pain?
I think certainly we look at trauma, and that can be recent trauma. It could be trauma from 25 years ago. It could be that slip and fall that was never rehabilitated. We hit our hip. We get a bruise. It starts to heal. Pain goes away, but the tissues there have adhesions, and the fascia becomes restricted. And slowly over time, that changes the way the fascia works. It changes the way we move that hip. So the cascade is we start to develop dysfunction. If we're lucky in this situation, the problem is right where we fell. So it's fairly easy to kind of ferret that out. But in many cases, the problem is distal to where the original injury was, because remember that fascia interconnects into what we often hear referred to as trains, anatomy trains. So dysfunction in the hip can cause problems on the opposite side in the shoulder, because the arm and the leg move intricately through gait. So it's important to look at the injury patterns. And certainly in today's society, because everything is driven by sitting, what we do at work, you know, what we do at home. You have to look at postural changes and the strains that posture put on in our body. So if we start to lose normal curves in the spine, or we start to adapt different reflexive changes in the way we hold our arm or our leg, then the fascia is going to accommodate that and will often overwhelm it, and then it's going to start to cause issues.
You know, fascial tenting, let's use that term, where, you know, it gets tight and it's locked up and it crinkles and looks like a wrinkled mess, is something that has been in the vernacular, if you will, from massage therapists to a lot of the work that we've done over the years. But that tenting pattern, as you say, there's many different triggering mechanisms that occur. Why isn't that something that can be resolved quickly, if you will, by stretching? Why is there a problem? It's like somebody's, you know, I can't stretch enough. I keep getting, and when I stretch, I seem to get tighter. Where's that correlation coming from? And we're talking anecdotal representations from patients.
Right. Well, I think in many cases, the location of the pain is not necessarily the location of the problem. So the pain is being referred from somewhere else, and it can be referred from a long distance. There's parts of muscles that become knotted, and we classically refer to those as trigger points. And when we push on an active trigger point, it will very often cause pain to be referred from there in a location that's not even adjacent to it. So a person may have ongoing knee problem, for example, and they stretch the hamstrings, the quadriceps, on and on and on, and they say, you know what, it's not making a difference. My x-ray looks clean. The MRI's fine. You know, the doctor said there's nothing wrong there. Well, it's probably because that pain that is in the knee is anatomically somewhere distal to the knee. So again, if you want to stretch, which I think is a good thing, then you probably want to look at stretching globally, everything in the body, if your intention is to make yourself more supple or have better flexibility.
You know, a visual that our audience can do for themselves is, if you take a long, narrow sheet of paper, even a roll out a piece of toilet paper and get it about 3 feet long, and with your fingers at the top, hold it at the top and have somebody else hold it at the bottom so it's stretched, and then you have this long, flat piece of tissue. Now, what you need to do is either from the top or the bottom, just change the pull slightly and watch what happens all the way through that long 3 foot piece of toilet paper. It turns, it torques, it twists. And that's the same thing that'll happen with fascia as it overlays muscles and organs and so forth. Subsequently, what's underneath it, whatever that structure is, no longer is firing properly, or no longer has the capacity to work the way it was meant to work.
Yeah, so, and that's a really good point. So one of the main functions of the fascia is what we call proprioception. In other words, it tells our brain and our body where we are in space. So if the fascia is not healthy or not doing what we're supposed to be doing, then the body and the brain has a difficult time maintaining an upright posture and making muscles contract and relax appropriately. So one of the classic things you see with a fascial problem is not necessarily a pain component, but you'll often see chronic weakness, because the fascia is shutting down the muscle that it surrounds, and then inevitably that muscle will get fatigued prematurely and sometimes atrophy.
So you get that representation and we used to call this, people have hit the wall, the threshold, they can't go beyond that, and they begin to break down. Sometimes they call it overtraining, where we see people get weaker instead of stronger over a period of years. So this, you know, this is part of the puzzle. Obviously there's a lot of other issues that are associated with that, but a lot of the inability people have. So is this also lifestyle? Is it something that happens because of postural patterns, people sitting all day long? You know, they're in the cars constantly. We're not getting the activity that we used to. Can that be one of the components?
No, certainly. I mean, posture is probably the number one cause of it, especially because you just don't see people as active as you used to be. So if we're at a desk and our hands are always in front of our body, we're using a mouse, then the shoulders roll forward. Wherever the shoulders go, the head progresses, so that the head moves forward. So then we start to lengthen the muscles in the back and tighten the muscles in the front. We actually have a name for that. It's called upper cross syndrome.
Let's hold that thought. We're coming up to a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to start right where we left off. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live in studio. My guest, your host this Wednesday evening, June the 6th, 7 p.m., Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about myofascial pain and inflammatory reactions, things that are kind of an enigma when it comes to fixing them. But we're going to put the light on it now, and we're also going to put the light on it this Wednesday evening. Make sure that you register for that class. Go to RozelleCare.com. That's RozelleCare.com. Hit the button, said register now, and get it done. Remember, these are our gift to community, and we'd love to have you there. Dr. Browning, welcome back again. You mentioned just before we broke for commercial that there's this thing called upper cross syndrome.
And there's actually a lower cross syndrome. This is two terms that were developed by a Czech therapist, Vladimir Janda, who's since passed, who was probably on the forefront of everything that we were talking about today. The guy was no doubt brilliant.
Explain that. I mean, I understand upper cross and lower cross patterns, but this is foreign to many people, even, you know, the traditional medical community. They don't get it. Janda was amazing. He was an amazing practitioner. Explain it as simply as you can.
Well, the premise of these two syndromes is the changes that occur most commonly because of what we do day to day, and the changes would be in our posture. We're going to see the shoulders roll forward, and the pec muscles, the muscles in the front of our chest muscles, start to get tighter. As that happens, our upper trapezius, that's the muscle that goes from the back of our head to our shoulder, starts to get tighter. So that's one half of the cross. On the opposite side of that, the muscles that are deep to our neck that should hold our head back become weakened, and the muscles in our mid-back, the lower trapezius, that should hold our scapulas together become weak as well. So there's the other half of the cross. The issue is, as time progresses, we start to talk about these muscles getting locked in short. The tight muscles get kind of locked into that position because the fascia changes, and then the muscles in the back get locked in long. So now we have this progressive change that becomes kind of permanent, not really, but slightly permanent. So then it becomes more convenient for that person's posture to progress further forward and further forward. I think the best endpoint example would be when you see that little old lady with that hump on her back. That Dowinger's hump, that's the absolute progression of that upper cross syndrome that not only has made her head go completely forward, it's called deformity in her spine that we could see on film. In other words, the spine is wedging. And it's near impossible for her to stand up straight. So what she has to do is rock her head backward to keep her eyes on the horizon. So it's a really bad scenario that usually goes along this progression of the upper cross syndrome.
And to balance it.
Oh, yeah. So the nervous system will go into, default mode because the eyes can't be kept on the horizon. So now her balance becomes worse. I mean, it's a cascade that's really, really unhealthy.
And you see this with people who basically are in the same postural pattern all the time, that they don't move, they don't stretch, they don't get up, they don't move around, so it begins to maladapt over time? Or what's the triggering mechanism other than that?
It could be anything from just not being conditioned right to what we do during the day. I think the important part is not so much how it got there, but how you fix it. So, you know, one of the things that I'm going to do when I present this lecture is we're going to stand people up, we're going to talk about posture. Posture being a predictor of where you're going. So if your posture is not ideal on the plumb line being a line that drops down through gravity. So if you're transitioning forward or backward, there's muscles that have to either shorten or lengthen to accommodate. That's a great predictor. So we can look at that and say, you know what? These are the things that we see now. This is what's happening to allow that to happen. And these are the things that most likely will occur if it's not changed. So we'll go through postural patterns as being a person's best way to kind of self-diagnose them. And you can do it by having your friend or a loved one just take a picture. Everybody's got a cell phone with a camera. Take a picture from the front of your body and one from the side, and you can drop this imaginal plumb line down and come up with a working diagnosis on your own.
Why do you see so much of it, you know, with an elderly population, geriatric population? What's happened to them over a period of time that has allowed this increased curvature, this Dowager's hump, to begin to form? And then you get a place where there's permanency.
I think probably the most common reason would be just lack of mobility and the loss of muscle over time. In other words, as people get older, they have a tendency not to move as much. As that happens, we lose muscle mass, and then, you know, the cascade follows from there. The bones start to move in different directions, and because sometimes we have osteoporosis or weakening the bones, they will actually deform. They'll wedge. So I think getting up and moving is probably the first thing that everyone should do, because by default, you're going to stretch the fascia, you're going to activate the muscles, and you're going to really waken up your nervous system on keeping you upright against gravity. Everything we do in the nervous system is about keeping us upright in gravity and keeping the eyes on the horizon. And if we lose that ability, we're in a world of hurt.
It's important that people understand that they are in control of a lot of these things taking place in the severity of how they present themselves over a long period of time. So, you know, this Wednesday evening, Dr. Browning is going to present these myofascial patterns, but more importantly, tell you what you really need to do and give you the capacity to be proactive in so many of this. We're coming up to a break, and this is a very interesting topic because it affects all of us at one point of our life or another. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. Don't go away.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, your host this Wednesday, June the 6th, 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing. He's going to be presenting the topic myofascial pain and inflammation. You know, those things that make you hurt a lot. This is an opportunity to really figure out how to change a lot of these untenable situations if you're willing to be proactive. Listen, you know, as we get older, things change. They're not as good as they were when we were 20 or we were 15 or we were, you know, younger and we move around. Try getting on the floor and move around like your grandchildren or your children and follow them. You can do it probably for about 2 minutes before you collapse. At the end of the day, there's a rationale, there's a reason, but more importantly, there's a fix, and that's what we're going to be talking about. Dr. Browning, welcome back. We're talking about a very interesting but very involved subject, and we're talking about the wrapper, if you will, the plastic wrap that surrounds everything that we have in our body, the muscles, the organ systems, the bones, and so forth. As you said early on in the program, you know, if it surrounds the heart, we're calling it, you know, the pericardium. If it surrounds the bone, we have a periosteum, a round ostium or bone. And all of this can make a huge difference and cause pain if it's not working the way it's supposed to. Let's get into the next piece a little bit, and we're going to, you know, kind of reference back. But let's talk about the inflammatory pathways. You know, why, how does this go hand in hand? Well, you said that the fascia, this wrapper, has nerves and has blood supply, but how does it then produce this inflammatory cascade, which we all know inflammation causes pain?
Well, like I said early on, the fascia is made up with collagen fibers, not different than ligaments and tendons and muscles and things like that. So if the collagen becomes damaged over time, the body's going to do its best ability to repair it. And it's going to send in these cells that are going to generate new tissue. And if the underlying environment is healthy, that tissue is going to change into healthy fascia, and then we should go about our business. But in many cases, because there's a consistent load on that tissue or the injury has been so significant, the collagen fibers don't return to the quality that they were before, and they turn into scar tissue. And the issue with scar tissue is it has lots of nerve fibers that go to it that tell us we have pain, and it has little blood supply. So what happens is it starts to get locally inflamed. And as the inflammation builds there, it's going to start to spread to the tissue around it, which is going to cause that tissue to become scarred. As that progresses over time, then we're going to start to get a low-level systemic inflammatory situation. And very often that's the person that has, you know, I got shoulder pain today, the other week it was my bum knee, my back. So we go through this pattern of, you can flip a coin, you know, what's hurting today? And almost always it's because we have this inflammatory cascade that's in place, and we have this scar tissue that keeps on telling the nervous system that there's something wrong. And because it's all over, the person has a hard time identifying what to do first to address the problem.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're saying is that one begets the other.
Absolutely.
So you end up with scar tissue, which promotes more degradation, restriction, incapacity, now promotes more scar tissue, and the body responds locally with this inflammatory reaction now, which begins to cause other problems and the inability for chemicals, neurochemistries and so forth to be able to be transported properly, right?
Right.
To targets. So the healing process now is muted and the pain patterns enhanced.
Right. So, you know, look at it this way. If I have a swimming pool and I throw a tiny pebble in the corner of the pool, eventually the wave of that pebble, albeit it'll be less, will reach the other side of the pool. So the same thing happens in the body. I think we need to also lay on top of that some controllable factors that we don't often think about. Dehydration. All of that connective tissue is probably 60-65% water.
So if you just described 80% of the population.
Exactly. So we have less hydration. So unfortunately, the nervous system works this way. If we don't drink enough water, initially it tells us we're thirsty. If we don't drink that water, then after a while the brain says, you know what? This guy's not going to help me out. I'm just going to tell him he's not thirsty. So people walk around chronically, you know, dehydrated and don't know it. The second thing is poor fats in the diet. All of these connective tissues are made up of good fats. We call them omega-3s. So if we don't have these quality fats in our diet, or maybe we're sabotaging them by inducing too many bad fats or trans fats, now the healthy surrounding fatty membrane that should be around these muscles is gone too. So no hydration, bad fats. Scar tissue, it's not a good scenario.
And lack of motion and
lack of motion, all those things. So, and it's a slow progressive change. It's not like we just wake up one day and then it hits us. We get little aches and pains that become more frequent until they become chronic.
My guest in studio, your host, this Wednesday evening, June the 6th, 7 p.m. at the Roselle Center for Healing in Fairfax. Dr. Harlan Browning, join us. He's going to be talking about myofascial pain and inflammation. You know, if you're hurting and you're stiff and you're tight and you can't move, and then you restrict your body motion because of that pain, that discomfort and so forth, there's a reason, there's an underlying pattern. And as Dr. Browning said earlier on in the program, it may not be where you're feeling it. It could be coming from someplace totally distant from that. And to understand it, you have to understand where the trigger is and what the mechanism is that's producing it. This is an opportunity. Go to RoselleCare.com. That's RoselleCare.com. RoselleCare.com and register for this class. As those of you know that have tried to get in the last several weeks, when we're full, we're packed. And, you know, we want to have the opportunity for you to attend and learn, because the more you know, the more you have capacity, the more you're able to do for yourself. Let's get a little bit more into the triggering mechanism. Fascia, you know, we talked about the omega-3s, the omega fatty acids that put out the inflammatory reaction. That's part of what you were talking about. But there's also things, nutritively that will predispose fascia to the tenting. And, you know, let's talk about that a little bit. What nutrient bases, you know, that are out there that people habitually in our society, you know, have problems with in producing these tightening, restrictive patterns?
Well, if we have imbalances of minerals or vitamins, then because those minerals and vitamins are incorporated into connective tissue, if we don't get them in our diet, then the quality of that tissue becomes poor. So magnesium, calcium, phosphorus are very important for collagen connective tissue. B12, very important for these connective tissues as well. So a person needs to have a diet that's conducive to developing healthy fascia, healthy bones, ligaments, and tendons. And very often we don't. I'd like to also add to this, poor digestion can be a driver of this. If we do not digest our proteins, we're not going to break them down into the amino acids that are essential to make this connective tissue. So for a lot of folks that have unsettled stomach problems, or it feels like their food is just sitting there, they're probably not digesting, and they're certainly not absorbing all the nutrients that they need.
And that's another problem as people get older. The digestive function becomes less optimal, if you will. When we're 60 years old, we produce about 30%, 35% of the hydrochloric acid in our stomach that we produce when we were 20 years old. And so we can't break down these proteins, as you just noted. And so subsequently, you don't have the capacity to be able to resolve the issues, you know, that present themselves. So when a patient comes in and, you know, they're complaining that they hurt. They hurt all over. And they've been everywhere. They've done all kinds of testing, and the testing has come back inconclusive or negative. How do you determine that this patient has this myofascial involvement, whether it's internal deep or if it's one that, you know, is a result of activity patterns? And so how do you diagnose it? How do you know you got a problem? This is what your problem is. And, you know, we're going
to
fix it.
Well, I think the first thing you need to do is look at the history of the problem and maybe ask them questions that never have been asked. You know, very often, people don't ask about the diet. They don't ask about, do you sleep on your stomach? You know, they don't ask about how many pillows you put underneath your head when you're lying on the couch. You know, small things like that can be very important into understanding the mechanism, the problem. You're certainly going to want to review things like the x-rays and the MRIs. Those are important. Those, to me, more are a predictor of things to come in many cases, especially when the person's been to multiple specialists and they say that there's nothing wrong with them. So it helps to gauge where you are, but doesn't tell you where you've been or where you're going necessarily. And I think the better way to look at it is to functionally assess the person. What's their posture look like? Okay, I'm going to keep on going back to that. What's the range of motion in their joints? Not just the joint that hurts, but in their whole body. What's the quality of their tissue? If you don't palpate or actually touch the area that hurts, you're going to have a hard time diagnosing it, and I assure you, you're going to have an even harder time fixing it. So you're going to go through and see what the quality of the fascia is. Do we have trigger points in those areas? Okay, if there's trigger points or big knots in these muscles, that is 100% indicator that there's a dysfunction in that muscle. So if we have all these things, we want to test the strength and the integrity of all these muscles. We physically want to see how strong they are. Do we have muscles that are habitually weak? If we have muscles that are habitually weak, by default, we're going to have muscles that do the opposite action, be tight all around the clock. So this is the person that stretches and say, hey, you know, I feel good for about 20 minutes after I stretch and it all comes back. Because the issue is they've never found the weak muscle that's causing the tight one to stay tight.
Dr. Harlan Browning, my guest in studio, your host, your presenter this Wednesday evening, June the 6th, 7 p.m. at the Results Center for Healing in Fairfax. Join us. All you have to do is get online and go to rozellecare.com and register, or simply call 703-698-7117. That's 703-698-7117. And tell the staff at the Results Center for Healing that you want to attend this really very specific and important presentation on your body pain and things that can't be found any other ways. You know, just because we have randomness, if you will, of pain patterns that show up in this elbow, this shoulder, this knee, it seems to jump from one place to the other. Today's world, you know, we start pointing fingers at things like Lyme disease, and we look at other bacterial infections, or we look at, you know, heavy metal and so forth, but not necessarily so. This is something that just occurs because of all the things we talked about, from postural involvement and so forth. Other question. As people, unfortunately in today's society, people are not as active. So we're losing core. We're losing that capacity to hold the body together. How contributory is the lack of core strength to fascial patterns?
Well, if you consider the core to be the quintessential linchpin to the upper and lower extremity, then it becomes really important. If a person doesn't have the integrity of the pelvis, okay, that's part of the core, and doesn't have good integrity of the spine, in other words, it's not ideally in a position that allows us to move normally or stand up normally, then we're going to be in trouble. As the core becomes weak, the pelvis has a tendency in many people to rotate forward, and that's part of that lower cross syndrome I touched on a little bit. So as the pelvis rocks forward, then it's going to increase the amount of curve in our low back, which is not necessarily a good thing because we start to compress the discs and the nerves that exit there. Well, those nerves go to a whole bunch of muscles, so by default, now we're starting to irritate the nerves. Now the muscles are not going to be able to do what they need to do. So very often the core weakness will cause these other things to happen, but it might not take place for a couple years. We were talking at the break a little bit before about plantar fasciitis. Okay, so plantar fasciitis almost always occurs because there's some sort of mechanical issue with the foot, meaning that it doesn't absorb energy when we move. and it doesn't become a rigid structure when we hit the ground and toe off. So if that doesn't occur, then all those forces are going to go through the soft tissue that surrounds it.
And so, cause the problems.
Yes.
As well.
So the person may have plantar fasciitis or a calf problem, or they may have something up the road from it.
Hold that thought. We're coming up to break. Dr. Harlan Browning, our guest, your host, will be right back. Don't go away.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizal Live, as you do every Sunday at 12 noon, right on the Eastern Seaboard. Those of you on the West Coast, do the math, subtract 3 hours. That's the time that you tune in. You know, I really want to acknowledge and thank armed forces around the world, because we're getting emails and we're apparently you're listening to us, and, you know, we really appreciate your service. Thank you so very much. You make this totally possible for us. My guest in studio, your host this Wednesday evening, June the 6th at 7 p.m. at the Rizal Center for Healing in Fairfax, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're going to be talking about myofascial pain and inflammation, an opportunity for you to really change a lot of things that nobody else can fix for you. And he's going to be talking about all kinds of different applications and processes. Dr. Browning, you know, this is an important subject, and it's one that you can make very simple. You know, those of you that have heard you many times in the past present information, walk away, say, oh my God, this man is brilliant. He has so much capacity and so ability to make something so difficult very, very simple in its application. What are you going to talk about this week?
Well, in the office, we talk about that triad, chemical, structural, emotional. I think I'm going to concentrate on the structural and the chemical for this. So the chemical side, we're going to talk about nutritional strategies, if you're not doing that, you have to do to keep the connective tissue healthy. That talks about things that you're eating or maybe not eating that you need to. And certainly nutrients that are anti-inflammatory, things that help to build healthy connective tissue to assimilate good fats in the diet. So we'll talk about all of those. And then we're going to go hard into the structural component. I'm going to pick on some people in class, and we're going to go through and we're going to look at postural patterns that are typical for people who have these fascial strains. We're going to look at range of motion. We're all going to do it in the class. We're going to look closely at the shoulder girdle, because that's easy to do, and find how we can identify limitations in range of motion that will often indicate we have a fascial problem. Then we're going to look at the actual tissue quality. We're going to teach people how to palpate a muscle, find trigger points, find adhesions in the fascia. And then with that, we'll be able to start to pull it together to understand that if you use all these big picture things, then you can help to identify where the location of the problem is.
So see, you need to bring a friend with you, so you have a partner to be able to find things on each other. What an opportunity. You can actually go away and be your own diagnostician and really figure out if you or someone in your family has this problem, this presentation. But more importantly, you're going to talk about the fix.
Yeah, we're talking about the fix. And in the office, we've had some relatively new technology for us that helps us look at virtually at a person's posture and that plumb line, and it's great. I'm going to try to get up and running on that. It's been sitting in a closet. I'm going to do my best to get it out so we can actually use that during the lecture, and we can maybe pick out a couple people and take pictures of them and show how that plumb line works and kind of dissect their posture to give them a better indication of where they're going wrong as far as what they're doing, lifestyle, exercise, you know, at work and all those things.
I mean, when you see the visual on this stuff, when you see that you're not standing in a plumb position, if you will, in a normal gravitational position, and you're way forward or you're way to the side or you're bent in one posture pattern when you should be perfectly straight, it's a problem. But, you know who you're going to have to schmooze to make that happen.
Yeah,
right?
I will talk to Dareth, because she's the one who spearheaded getting this, and we've just dropped the ball, and it's in a closet or underneath something somewhere.
It is. And, you know, when you actually are able to look on a grid and see what your body's doing, it's an incredibly powerful thing. In my book, some years ago when I wrote, Ageless Health, Health is a Do-It-Yourself Program, there's a whole piece of that in there. It's postural pattern and how you should stand and so forth. But this Wednesday evening, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor, will be your instructor at the Rizal Center for Healing in Fairfax. Those of you know and have heard him, now you know why we call him the professor, because his capacity, his ability to relate information is second to none. It's an amazing opportunity for you to learn and apply something that is going to be aha moment to your life. We're coming up to that place where we have to say goodbye, and we will be here same time, same place next week. We love you all. See you then. Bye.